was appointed as the 31st Secretary of Agriculture. He has one priority that is the top of all the others, and that is to remove the barriers that can inhibit your success. So it's my pleasure to introduce the Honorable Secretary of Agriculture. Please welcome Mr. Sonny Perdue.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you all very much. Thank you all. What a difference a year makes, Mark. Last year you were introducing me and they still had me held in the whole room back there. You thought you were going to have to do a song and dance up here. So we work very well together today. Another thing, last year y'all hadn't figured out whether you like me yet or not. Remember E15? So that's all good. But thank you for a warm welcome. It's good to be with you here. It's been quite a roller coaster ride over 2018, from Disneyland and Anaheim last year to Orlando at Disney World this year. But we farmers are farmers, and you're tough and resilient, and hope that ride ends well. We're going to talk about some things today that we think will be a great fun ride going forward in that. But there's still a lot of anxiety, stress, natural. I mean, you're not a farmer if you can't find something to worry about, right? But nonetheless, I'm glad to be here with you again today. And we look forward to having a conversation. I've met with some of your folks outside and your commodity representations. And we've talked about a few things already I want to share with you. And let's get right to the point. Obviously, farmers are pretty smart people. Some people don't understand the complexity of farming these days, all the things that are required. I had an opportunity to tell one of your new members of Congress just yesterday, before yesterday in the hearing. She said she had been National School Teacher of the Year. I said, well, ma'am, what you'll understand is that agriculture is probably the best thing going for STEM education. You got science and technology and engineering and math and finance and everything else there. And to be a good farmer, successful farmer, you got to know all of it. So really, when you hear a lot of people talk about STEM education, they ought to try farming about that. That's a great education in STEM education. So the group that met me this morning, talked about their sense that I kind of get it and I'm one of you all, and I think it comes authentically, as Mark said, having grown up on a diversified row crop farm. And the way I like this, farmers are pretty good about sizing up people, honestly. You know that. You're pretty good about looking at me. They were congratulating me from getting out across the country and meeting people. But farmers are kind of face-to-face people. You like to size people up. You like to look them in the eye, and you like to see what they're made of. My favorite expression is farmers can smell what you've been stepping in. And that's pretty true. So, yep, it's true. Okay. Well, let's get on with it. But also, farmers can be, not all the time, but can be a wee bit impatient too, right? And I'm one of y'all, please. But it's kind of like, what are you doing for me today, kind of thing. And then after we get that question answered, we throw that away and say, well, what are you doing for me tomorrow, kind of deal. So I want to talk about that, because last year, you remember, there was a little bit of misinformation about E15, and there was a little furor at this meeting, actually, last year. We kind of got resolved and calmed over, and I made some declarative statements about that. But let's answer that question. Really, what have you done for me? Farming's been tough over the last 5 or 6 years since the peak in 13. We know what's happened to farm income. And there are not many businesses, folks, that can stand a 50% plus drop in revenue in a few years and survive. So obviously what you all have done is use the working capital you had built up. They'd used, you're just pretty good. You're pretty good folks about hook and crook how to get by. But it's tough. Let's don't mistake the fact that it's real. I had a customer one time that sat in my office. He said, as a farmer, I used to love to whine till it came true on me. And it's kind of coming true on some places now about the stress and the anxiety economically about farming. So I don't want to joke about that. I want to acknowledge that it's anxious out there, and we hope for better days. But farmers are some of the most optimistic, hopeful people. That's why you do what you do every day, and I hope that we can get that. So last year's hot issues, as you remember, when I stood before you last year, there was a concern about E15. Is this administration going to do what it said it was going to do regarding E15 year-round sales? And I told you at that time, President Trump had affirmed to me declaratively that he had you back, that E15 was going to go year-round, and guess what? It has gone year-round for E15. I'm happy. We've got a couple of corn guys in here. What does that mean? Greater demand for our corn surplus there to get those stocks down and utilize. It'll take us a little while to build that demand, but I think pretty soon across the country you'll see E15 pumps going in. These retailers will make that investment there because they know it will be accepted by their customers. That's another choice there. So you also know that last fall, EPA acting administrator then confirmed that he would go year-round with that, but we had some rule writing that had to be done to order to. Everything in D.C. has to have a rule. They can pass a law. It's like the Farm Bill. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But you got to have rules this and rules that, and they don't go very fast. They could never make it farming, I'm just telling you. It's a good thing they're in D.C. because they don't move fast when it comes to rules. And while he told me a couple of weeks ago, because of the shutdown, and we sort of forbidden USDA to use that as an excuse, it slips out every now and then because of the shutdown, they didn't think they would get the rule over E15 year-round out before driving season. But they were hoping to have some discretionary enforcement. Well, there's nothing like confirmation processes to get you moving faster. And he had his confirmation hearing this week, and he figured out how to get the rule done by June the 1st for E15 year-round, and he was confirmed yesterday. So congratulations, Mr. Wheeler. Zippy Duval, my good friend in American Farm Bureau, another Georgian, likes to tell the story when I was elected governor that one of my first statements was, you know, farmers, when it comes to policy, when it comes to influencing political people, or sometimes, I know it was this way in Georgia, you kind of felt like you had to take your hat in the hand and come around to the back door and knock very gently to get in and get heard. And Zippy likes to tell the first thing I told him when I was elected governor, I said, farmers are welcome at the front door proudly. And I hope that's the way we've done at USDA in helping you to facilitate your reputation and what you do for this country at the front door of Washington, D.C. there. I want you to know you're welcome at USDA anytime. We need you and we need your help. You, by the way, Zippy Duval's wife, Bonnie, is having some real issues. I hope that you'll pray for her. She had surgery this week, but remember them. They are people of faith and they know the Lord's looking out for them, but pray for Bonnie Duval this week. We're also told that you were pursuing the end of the silly and ridiculous Sam and Dunn's number requirements for farmers participating in our conservation program. Remember that? Sam's and Dunn's, isn't that crazy? Well, guess what? 3 weeks later, that was done as well, and that's gone. So the 2018 appropriations bill permanently removed that silly, time-consuming, privacy-violating requirements, and frankly, when it comes to rulemaking, we couldn't wait to file that deregulation rule quick enough when they pass that legislation. So the last thing we talked about last year was the importance of getting a 2018 farm bill. That's the guidelines. That's what you all have to plan for in your partnership going forward about the safety net. And while the 2014 farm bill expired in September, we were able to continue under those provisions until December. And when December 20th rolled around, a farm bill had been passed and the president signed it on December the 20th. I remember that because it was my birthday. It was a great birthday present to have that farm bill signed. But Actually, I didn't realize it had been that many years between when Congress had introduced the Farm Bill in one year and passed it in the same year. So we were glad to do that because I felt like our folks at USDA who had worked very hard, they call it technical assistance when they ask us at USDA. Now, they're the legislators. They do the bill, and that's what it should be. But our guys have got a lot of information they need in order to get it right. And our folks at USDA provided over 2,000 incidents of technical administration, technical assistance to the Congress that way, both sides, Democrat, Republican, and House and Senate. And they worked hard on your behalf to let the Congress know what would happen. You know, I'm sure you've never heard of any unintended consequences in any legislation, but that's what we tried to avoid, the unintended consequences. This sounds like a great idea. Let's do that. Whoopee! And you push here, and it goes out way over there. So that's what they did, over 2,000. I'm really proud of the team for, at USDA for their help in that regard. Even though they didn't write the bill, they helped those who wrote the bill. So we're happy. I know we got some sorghum folks in the room, which was a particular roller coaster ride last year. It was began with a fight with washing machines with China. You remember, I think, 30-something boats on the water with heading to China, and there was a WTO lawsuit, which was subsequently dropped, and then you got pulled into the 232-301 tariff. So amidst all those challenges, though, after years of pushing EPA, the good news was finally approved the biofuels pathway for grain sorghum oil. And that opens a new outlet for renewable biofuels grown right here in the United States of America. And we worked hard to provide that data to justify that. And sometimes we had to kind of prod a little bit, but for you, EPA to finalize this product. I want to just tell you, though, there's also a new day front door at EPA for agriculture. I know I've heard some of you tell me that they couldn't even get in prior years, but I want to tell you that recently confirmed Administrator Wheeler gets it. He's been a partner and a real help, and I think we've got a friend at the EPA that wants to protect our environment but also wants to protect the most endangered species in America. That's the American farmer. And so they have a big say over new registration of chemicals, the reauthorization of chemicals. Chlorpyrifos was a recent example. They'll have a big say in glyphosate and all the challenges there. So again, take advantage of the relationship. Thank them where you can and appeal where you need to in order to get things done. Now, y'all don't want to talk about trade, do you? Let's talk about trade. What else is there? Everywhere I go from north, south, east to west, what do I hear about? I hear about trade, I hear about labor, and I hear about regulations, and most recently, since it failed to get into the appropriations bill, I hear about disaster from some parts of the country for the 2018 hurricanes and wildfires. But trade is important. It's really important. And I listened to some of the panel up here today and the unanimous declaration of supporting the USMCA, and I want to give you all a hand for thank you for doing that. So that's really important. You know that it does not, it's never over till it's over until Congress ratifies it, Mexico ratifies it, and Canada ratifies it, and your support's going to be helped. These four organizations joined the American Farm Bureau Federation announced earlier this week, the Chamber of Commerce. I think we're building a great momentum of a lot of organizations to help Congress understand how important this is for the American economy, not just the American ag economy. And you remember when President Trump threatened to withdraw from NAFTA, there was a big, huge gasp over all of agriculture. And we said then, really, we've been pretty good with it. We're pretty happy for the most part. Please, first of all, do no harm. That was kind of what we kept repeating. First of all, do no harm in these negotiations. And by the way, you'll love this. It's rumored that there was a map put on the Oval Office when the president was talking about withdrawing from NAFTA. I've heard someone took a map in there and showed the president what would happen if he withdrew from NAFTA and where all that that red line from votes that he had gotten, who it would hurt. And to his credit, the president listened, changed his mind. He was so proud. He said, I already had the withdrawal resolution ready to sign. But he changed his mind. The neat thing about that, the other day when the vice premier, the number two man in China, was in the Oval Office, he had his assistant bring in that map and hold it up there, because he's kind of proud about that. So I was proud he remembered that too. We framed it and sent it to him, and it's a big size, but he kept it in his office, and he uses it. So that was pretty good. Lynn and Davey and Jimmy and Dan, thank you all. Thank you for your unanimous support. Obviously, as you said, there are always things we would have loved to have had. There were things on our wish list that we got. But I want to also tell you this. I want to brag on Ambassador Lighthizer. Early on, I don't know if he could figure out whether he liked us farmers or not. He kind of felt like we were kind of hollering wolf a lot about the challenges and about the threats. But at the end of the day, you all continue to work with him and work on him to help him understand the importance of agriculture. And he was a stalwart at the end of the USMCA agreement, hanging in tough for agriculture. And I want to tell you later, I feel like he's doing the same thing with China. So when you get a chance, he doesn't get many thank yous as the U.S. Trade Ambassador. If you think about it, write Ambassador Lighthizer a note and say thank you for the USMCA agreement too. So he would appreciate that. And anytime somebody does something nice for you, don't you want them to do it again? So send him a thank you note and let him know about that. But I'm really, really happy. I noticed I was listening to Mark in the panel up here earlier, and he commented that Jimmy got the applause meter award. And I want to tell you why I think that happened. Jimmy had the courage to articulate what farmers believe. That is, we believe in the flag and we believe in the prayer. And I don't know how you can be a farmer without prayer. I don't find many farmers without faith. I'm just telling you, because you got faith to put that seed in the ground every day. So thank you, Jimmy, for your courageous talk about farmers and what we believe. We need more of it. More of it. You know, it's just like everything in D.C. You can't just say USMCA. You got to give it a little cutesy name. We got some people referring to it now as USMCA. So if you hear USMCA, that's USMCA. Don't get confused. It's not some Chinese. Never mind. All righty. Well, we're excited about the opportunity to have an improved version of this agreement. And again, I think it's even better. In fact, I would challenge any of you to go through line by line for agriculture, for labor, for autos, or many other parts of the economy. And I think it's improvement virtually in every sector. I know I've got some friends in Georgia and Florida in the produce and perishable fruit business. They didn't get much improvement, but it wasn't there to start with. But Ambassador Lighthizer hung in tough till the end, and we couldn't get that one across the line. We're continuing to work on that, but that was a disappointment for them. But by and large, we're continuing to work with that. You know what important markets are. Canada and Mexico are always in the top three markets. We need them. They need us. And we actually, I like to say we live in the best neighborhood on earth when you look at North America. From Mexico, the United States, and Canada, we ought to be trading with one another. Now, the NAFTA agreement earlier had kind of taken some advantage of some of those tariffs, and other countries from around the world were using Mexico to slide in products that we should be making here. That's what the president understood. That's why he called the question. But they're good, and we look forward to it. We had both the Secretary of Mexico Agriculture and the Minister McCauley from Canada in D.C. last week at the Ag Outlook Forum. We again recommitted to relationships there that would enable all of our countries to trade in an agricultural way. Now, the only kind of part that we need to think about and talk about is I had expected the 232 tariffs to come off when that agreement was concluded. They're not off yet, but we're still working on it. That's the only little pending issue. We've got to get these retaliatory tariffs off. And I believe the attitude's softening somewhat there. If we can work from a quota system rather than a tariff system and get the tariffs back off, we can really go to town with ag exports. So I want you to know we're working on that. If you got questions about it, we'd love to talk to you about it. But we want to get these 232 tariffs off between Mexico and Canada and get back to where we were blowing and going in that way. So I'm hopeful. Now, yep. Who's the big gahunga in the room? China, obviously. I want to tell you, you farmers understand you're in it for the long term. If we can hold on, we're in for the long term. And you also know that you can't plant in August and harvest in September or October. That you got to be done decently in order. And that's what President Trump understood when he saw that China, since they'd been entered into the WTO a few years ago and made all these commitments about how they would trade, it really hadn't been enforced, and they had not complied with it. They'd built their economy over doing things that were unfair trade practices, unfair trade barriers, and essentially had begun kind of jerking us around in a lot of ways. And he said, we can't have that. There was a growing trade deficit between China and the United States that he understood was a financial challenge for the future. And so, like anything, as farmers, when you see things that are not right, you want to call attention to it. And he called attention to that. So, but the good news is, I think he's using the power of his office for leverage to get change, long-term enforceable change in the relationship between the United States agriculture, particularly in China. And our negotiators have met four times since December, two times over there, two times over here. And I am cautiously optimistic about the progress. I don't know about President Xi in China. I know their economy, frankly, appears from a stock market perspective to have been hurt much more than our economy has been, although we knew that and you knew that when we call through the flag on China, agriculture was right at the point of the spear. Why is that? It's because it's one of the most productive things we do here in the United States, and you all can outproduce anybody anywhere in the world. Frankly, probably if they had no barriers, we'd be, you know, exporting everything everywhere. And we understand that, but that's why we need to rebalance this relationship, because it had become very unfair, and you all were going to be retaliated against because you had the trade surplus, and we know that we had become fairly dependent on China as a large customer. So I think and hope that both sides can make progress in these negotiations. I believe that President Trump truly wants a trade deal. We're hopeful that he and President Xi can meet in the near term and conclude. A lot of work to be done. A lot of progress has been made, but there are a lot of hurdles there. It's like, you know, writing out a contract. You just can't shake hands anymore and expect it to be done and complied with. There are a lot of details, but in Washington this last week, week before last, they were going line by line on agreements of where the issues were in dealing with that, which I think means that we're setting up a foundation for the two leaders of the nation to come to an agreement. Folks, if we can come to an agreement, China needs our stuff. He needs your stuff. They need your stuff. And I think it can be, we can't get too excited about it, but it can be a bonanza for American agriculture, not just in soybeans, but in more than that. Speaking of soybeans, we were sitting there in the Oval Office as the number two guy, Vice Premier Hu, was talking to the president about their desire for a deal. And as a good faith gesture, he said, you know, we bought 5 million back in December. We bought 5 more million by the first of the year. And now we want to commit to buy 10 more million metric tons of soybeans there. So the president said, that's great. Sonny, go out and tell your farmers that about the 10 million metric tons. Well, I didn't leave right then. And he looked at me after a while. He said, Sonny, why don't you go on out and tell him? I said, Mr. President, I want to stay. I'm hope there's more. So anyway, and, you know, the vice premier looked over and he said, there'll be more. There'll be more. So we'll see how that goes anyway. But You do need to know agricultural trade with China is high on the president's priority list, and I can assure you that one thing, and I'll tell you a specific quote. He makes one thing pretty crystal clear in our meetings. He has the back of American farmers and ranchers. In the Oval Office last week, President Trump, when the vice premier was in there during this episode I just described, President Trump looked at Ambassador Lighthizer and Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, who'd been leading those discussions. He said, "It sounds like y'all are making real progress on this intellectual property thing and technology, and that's all good, but I want you to take care of our farmers." Now, that's a direct quote from President Trump, and I appreciate it. I don't know how a guy that grew up and had a career in New York City understands farmers so much, but he has a natural affection and affinity for people of the land. I think it's because he understands that you all are builders like he are. He is. It's you take different things, land and soil and nutrients and seed, and put them together, and you make something that wasn't there before. But he understands the risk taking that you all do. And I've heard it over and over and over again, Sonny, you take care of our farmers. And that's what he expects me to do. And that's why we're trying to work really hard on these trade deals along with him to get that done. So I'm happy to report that. That's the facts and the truth. So when President Trump stood up to China, as no other president has, China retaliated, as you well know. And the fact is the Chinese government was hurting its own economy. It appeared to make no difference to them, but it seems to be making some difference now. So we know what happened, and our president was not willing to stand idly by and allow American farmers to take the hit. As you know, he authorized and instructed me to take trade mitigation procedures and processes. After your seed were in the ground, you had no idea about any disruption or all this kind of stuff going on, and he felt obligated. So we proposed and worked on and implemented a two-step plan called the Market Facilitation Program, Food Purchase and Distribution Program, and an Ag Trade Promotion Program, providing up to $12 billion of assistance in the ag country. And ladies and gentlemen, I've had probably more bankers tell me than farmers tell me how appreciative they are, how it turned some bottom lines from red to black. And I'm appreciative of the president for understanding that agriculture was going to take the hit and authorizing that money to be injected into the farm economy. I hope you all used it well. So we charged our WTO chief economist to develop a WTO defensible model to determine potential damages. I know when these numbers came out, the corn guys said, "What do you mean a penny? That's insulting." The fact is we had to defend the trade, the tariff damages, and the fact is we had not been making that much corn exports to China, as you know, in that period of time, and that's one of the reasons it happened that way. So we got a lot of compliments. I'm impressed the way our folks implemented the market facilitation program and got it out. And also, here's another example of President Trump. He's on your side, I'm telling you. Some of our bean counters in the government wanted me to continue to lay that second tranche. We had first initially talked about September, when the first one came out, and then December. And then it kind of rolled on. It's a little bit of a mother may I environment up there, honestly. And we had to get permission to, you know, have the money appropriated that way. I just couldn't do it, you know, like I wanted to. I had to get permission, and some of those didn't want to give me permission. They wanted me to continue to delay. And I finally just said, "We're going to have to go see the boss." They and I sat in front of that Oval Office there, and we both laid out our cases. And it didn't take 30 seconds. And I said, "Mr. President, your reputation's on the line, my reputation's on the line. We need to do what we told people we were going to do." He looked right at the other party and said, "We're going to take care of our farmers." And the money was out. So that's another example of President Trump doing that. So, all right. So let's pray for a great China resolution as we go forward. And certainly it's not the only market. The other thing you need to know about Ambassador Lighthizer is he understands Japan is a big deal. We know that as TPP becomes implemented across the world, that we're going to be at a bigger disadvantage in Japan. He's laser focused on that, understanding that Japan, we need to get a deal with Japan that's TPP or better. And he's committed to do that, and I'm hoping that we can see that done very soon this spring. That he understands the timeliness of it as well, knowing when these other things will come in. So once China and USMC are off the table, I think we'll have enough energy to work on Japan and Philippines and Taiwan and India and Malaysia and Indonesia. Don't y'all want to go all around the world selling your stuff? That's what Ted McKinney's doing. So, Farm Bill, we got it, you know, Congress got it done, thankfully. Some really improvements, I think, there. Your flexibility in ARC PLC is, well, good flexibility. CRP, I think, will expand it and give us some short-term answers in many places that way. And while there are many complexities, we're going to work as hard as we can to get these rules out. This is sort of a complex issue on CRP. We hope by the end of the year we can have all the rules where you'll know, but we don't think you'll miss a year signing up. So a face to familiar to many of you all, our Deputy Secretary Steve Sinsky, who was head of the American Soybean Association for many years, sends his regards. He said he sure hated missing 23 years straight, but we got these things called cooling off periods in D.C., like he's going to come down here and give y'all some secret deal, you know, that kind of thing. But he misses you and wishes he were here with you, but he's managing. Steve Sinsky is managing the implementation process through all of our missionaries, our undersecretary from NRCS to FSA to FAS to other things there to keep it moving on a timeline. So FPAC, which when we realigned to put NRCS in with FSA, is moving. They held their listening session this last week, and I think over 600 people attended. You all certainly commented on that, and we appreciate that. When I talk about customer service, you remember last year I talked about our goal of the USDA is to be the most effective, the most efficient, most customer-focused organization in the federal government. When you call us, I don't want you to think I'm calling another government office so you'll get the runaround here and there. We're building up contact managers so you can have somebody answer the phone, answer your question, or direct you to somebody who could. So that's our goal in that regard. And speaking of that, when we talk about customer focused, I want to thank all of our USDA employees, those food safety inspectors that were out there every day working without a paycheck, regular paycheck. Those NRCS people who came to work through mandatory funding. But I also want to tell you, I want to thank the people at OMB for allowing us to get our FSA workers back so they could sign some of those checks that you all had out there and get back to work, and then a plan to come back even before the shutdown ended. I know the last time in the previous years in a shutdown, there seemed to be extra effort to make things as painful as possible. We were doing our best this year to make it as painless as possible because you all had to deal with us and needed FSA there. We wanted them there to serve you. So that's an example of what we're trying to do. As I indicated to you, labor is always an issue. We are continuing to advocate at the White House for a comprehensive immigration program that will work for ag labor, for a legal guest worker program, and you all continue to give us your ideas that way. At a recent Ag Outlook Forum, I brought up a subject that concerns me more and more in a general area. We've got, in the social media space out there, we've got a movement that's creating fear of our food. And it's a dangerous thing, and I think as farmers, we need to be public. We usually just kind of sit behind our farm gate knowing what we do, how we do it. We feel comfortable, our consciences are clear. But folks, we got to get outside the farm gate now and tell people what we're doing, how we're doing it, in order for them to open up your your farm and let them see what you're doing. You don't have a thing in the world to be ashamed about for producing the safest, most abundant, most affordable food in the world. And that's the world's not understanding that. So we all have a responsibility in speaking up locally and globally about there's nothing about our food to fear, and we've got to be pretty aggressive at USDA. We're going to be doing that, and there are a lot of things of technology coming in that we can use in farming. So I just want to thank you again. I want to close. In fact, fearing your food and denigrating others has kind of become part of it. I don't know if y'all watched the Super Bowl at all, but there was a commercial on there. And talking about some products some of you corn growers may have produced, and they don't use it anymore. Well, guess what? I don't use theirs anymore either. So let me just tell you, you're a great bunch of people to work for. I love the job. Wish I could do it from Georgia, but I love the job. And I want to thank you for allowing me to be your Secretary of Agriculture. God bless you.
Mr. Secretary, I'm not sure, but I think they like you. So we got over last year, whatever that was, and sincerely, we appreciate